Welcome to the Film Experience Podcast. This is your host, Nathaniel, and I'm here with Kevin O'Keefe.
Good morning.
Candace Frederick.
Good afternoon.
Erica Mann.
Hello.
Andrew Carden.
Hey, everybody.
And Chris File.
Hello.
I'm curious, did anybody rewatch any scene to refresh your memory?
Yeah, I actually had to go back to see I, Tonya and Call Me because the first time I'd seen those was at Toronto in September, the festival. So I was a little, I had to go back and refresh my memory on the performances because that was the only two that I couldn't really remember.
I rewatched Lady Bird very recently just because I am maybe an 8 on it where everybody else is like a 12 on it. And I wanted to see if I was remembering things wrong. And ultimately I landed basically at the exact same place, which is that I think it's really great for the first two acts and kind of falls apart in the last 20 minutes or so. But I did get a little less grumpy about, because I was sort of like begrudgingly, I don't really like any of the supporting actress performances nominated, but I was a little bit more begrudging about Laurie Metcalf before being my pick of the five, and now I'm a little bit more full-throated that, like, I do think she's good. I just think it's unfortunate that we've landed on this five when there were a lot of really exciting choices this year.
Mm-hmm. I agree. The exception, I will stand hard for Alice and Janney, but everyone else here can literally go.
Oh my goodness.
I had kind of like the opposite reaction. Usually there's one performance where I'm just like, I just can't with that performance in any acting lineup. But I think these are all really good. They just wouldn't be my top five necessarily.
Right. Yeah, like there's nothing, I just want to clarify when people were asking me, I said, you know what, these aren't my favorite. And when I was ranking them, I was just saying, you know, all of them are fantastic. Like they're just brilliant. Like they're good. But it just seemed like there were a lot of performances that were overlooked.
So that naturally leads to this question. Since readers have already read all of our opinions about these five performances, Candace, let's start with you. Who do you most miss here that you would have nominated?
I would have nominated Betty Gabriel from Get Out, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, when I think about supporting actresses' performances from last year, that was one that has been burned in my memory. I think she just completely immersed herself in that performance. She's such a very important part of what that film is trying to say. And every time she's on screen, which is actually not very often, but when she's there, she makes such a mark. And so I'm like stunned that she's not here. And it's funny.
There wasn't much conversation for her all year. It feels like she had... Because I was one of those people that was trying to champion her performance as well, but it just never got any momentum. It just seemed like it was one of these things that just constantly felt crazy that nobody was talking about her.
Well, RuPaul tried too.
Yes.
I liked that. I appreciated that. I saw that.
Yeah. Candace, that word you used, immersed, is a perfect word for that performance. It actually describes what's going on with the psyche as well of that character.
Absolutely. I mean, she really illustrated what the sunken place was in such a brilliant way.
Yeah.
Where it almost seemed like she was fighting it. I mean, in one particular scene, she seemed like she was trying to fight her way out of it, but also was just like so scared to get out of it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think of that, and you know, it's interesting when I saw that Leslie Manville was nominated, I actually had to remember, I was like, oh, Cyril, oh, okay, that's interesting. I had to remember her role in it, and not just, I actually think that she's fine in it, but I obviously couldn't remember her. So I had to think about it. I actually despise Phantom Thread, like the entire movie, but she actually is decent in it. She's the person who I think if I were to ever watch that movie again, which I doubt I ever will, she would be the only reason why.
Mm-hmm. Chris, how about you? Who do you most miss here?
I would put Tiffany Haddish in all five slots.
Yes! Yes.
Oh, wow.
It's not just this performance that everybody gets all of these huge laughs from that, you know, you can revisit it a million times like I have and get a new favorite joke from her every time. It's not just the booty hole line. But also at the same time, while she's doing all of these massive laugh joke moments, she's also building this character in a way that I don't think people appreciate, not just in this performance, but the way that people build comedy performances as well. And I don't...
What do you mean by that?
She's playing, you know, that friend that is always trying to lighten the mood. At the same time, what she's doing by making everybody else feel happy is to try to stave off her own insecurities and her own... I think there's more to that performance. I think she's sad without ever saying that she's sad. Like, she doesn't have to... She builds it through the jokes, I guess. I'm not explaining it very well, but...
Chris and I are very aligned on... I think Tiffany Haddish delivers the best performance of the year, regardless of gender, regardless of category. I am... One scene that comes back to mind constantly is the prayer scene where she starts leading the prayer in the bedroom. And I think that what Chris is talking about the character's sadness never really being stated, I think that enforces a lot of it. Because, like, this is a woman who's sort of hard partying. She loves to have a good time. But religion is also very core to who she is. That she, you know, she may be praying in her own very specific kind of profane way, but she's still full-throated in that. And I think that faith is something that people, you know, obviously I think she does a good job of selling the fact that Dina would have come up with faith, but I also think it's something that adults turn to in times, not all adults, but some adults turn to in times where their life isn't going as exactly as they expect it to.
One, I just love you guys' interpretations of it. I've read so many really great interpretations of her performance that I think all the interpretations are better than her actual performance, honestly. I mean, I went away from the film and I was just like, oh, that was really fun. I didn't think anybody's performance was particularly standout. I didn't see the layers that you guys very eloquently have illustrated. But I mean, it's just interesting because I know that I am in the minority with this, but I'm kind of startled by the amount of praise that she has received for that performance.
Kevin, so who would you have voted for?
Well, Haddish would be my number one. I also want to give a shout out to Christine Baranski in A Bad Mom's Christmas, which is my gonzo pick in this category, because she runs away with that movie in a way that I've seen very few performers just take something. I mean, it sort of reminds me of, it's a lead performance, but of Emma Stone in Easy A, where it's just like you're watching somebody who just so plugs into what the movie is immediately and then just effortlessly walks through the rest of it. That's Christine Baranski in A Bad Mom's Christmas.
I like that.
But the performance that I've sort of like, it's grown on me every time I've seen the movie, and I've seen the movie four times, is Amira Kassar in Call Me By Your Name, who plays the mom. That is, I mean, we want to talk about, like, supporting performances. Like, she does not have that many scenes. And those scenes that she does have, she's often kind of, you know, servicing either Mr. Perlman or servicing the two leads. But the two big ones are her scene where she reads the book. She's translating it from German, the story about the knight and the princess, which has to, like... It's kind of difficult because it has to, like, very bluntly underline the theme of the movie, but also play as this, like, really comforting family moment between what is really an unconventional family as far as how progressive and how welcoming and how loving, how physically loving it is. She's stroking Elio's hair the entire time she's reading the book while doing something very, I mean, she's sitting there translating German on the spot. Like, she's doing something very, she's doing something very academic, but it doesn't feel cold. It feels so loving. And you get that same feeling in the car scene when she's driving Elio back from the station. It's, you know,
that all scene of 30. Is a beaut. It's just a perfect scene.
And she communicates so much with absolutely no dialogue and just physical contact and the look on her face. It really is like the performance that grows on me the most every time I see the movie and a character that, like, if Luca wants to make 17 sequels to this movie, I really want to see a movie that features her more prominently.
Right. Anybody else?
I would also shout out to Betty Buckley in Split, who I also thought was just terrific. And yeah. I didn't even care for the film, but I just thought it was so awesome to see her in a big box office hit with a juicy role. And, you know, she just, you know, had a field day in that role.
So I'm glad you guys mentioned Tiffany, because that was going to be one of mine. But just to follow up with my other one, I don't know whether she would be considered supporting. I think it's debatable. But Carey Mulligan in Mudbound. Let me just preface saying that I loved Mudbound. It was my number one. I'm still salty, bitter that it has not received the accolades I think it deserves, because I think what Dee Reese did, being able to jump between those many storylines and still create that beautiful story is just, you know, that's just me. I could rant for hours, but just to go back to Carey. I you know what? I just think she just did a brilliant job. Just, you know, the character, you just see her kind of go through, you know, the story, being the housewife, doing what she's supposed to, and in a time where a woman's role was, you know, take care of the children and just be by her man, support him. But you know, you go through it and you watch her and also Mary J. being these two mothers and seeing the contrast. And then that one scene where she goes through a traumatizing moment. I don't want to spoil whoever's listening, but a very traumatizing moment. And she's clinging to Mary's character and just completely just breaking down and sobbing. And knowing that this wasn't the life that she had envisioned for herself, knowing that it was just kind of, you know, thrown onto her, and knowing what could have been, I think Carey really just did a great job. And, you know, I just think the whole cast was incredible. You know, again, I could make the argument that a lot of more awards, acting awards especially, could have been given out, or nominations, but yeah, I think I wanted to give a quick shout out to Carey because she really did that. Truly,
that scene you mentioned, I think is the best scene in the movie. Because, and not just for Carey, but Mary J. Blige's reaction. It's like two performances that are totally doing, like, the characters are actually not close, and the what they're feeling is not the same remotely, but it's such a connected moment for me, for actors, of like, they both understand exactly the core of the scene and their own arcs. I just love that scene.
Mm-hmm. Carey is great in that. I actually kind of wish that she was here instead of Mary J. Blige, honestly.
You know what? I was like, you know what? Let me just jump in and say, like, honestly, if I was going to replace something, I would, from Mudbound especially, I think Carey, you know, in comparison, probably, in my opinion, should have taken Mary's spot. You know, but again, as I said, you know, the whole cast is just fantastic. It just blows my mind that they weren't in the conversation, but you know.
It's weird how Carey Mulligan is so quickly already taken for granted after coming onto the scene fairly recently and just delivering every time. Yeah. She's even great in that terrible Wall Street sequel.
Oh god!
I forgot about that.
That seems to have happened to Jessica Chastain too a little bit.
I love Jessica Chastain. I thought she could have been here for Molly's Game. That's a completely different category in conversation.
Yeah. She was my winner. She was my winner in supporting and best actress this year for Molly's Game. I mean,
yes.
Wow.
Same here. Same here.
I love how we're all just like, oh my god. Like, it's really fascinating. I swear to God, like I always feel like I know. Like I've been watching the nominees for since I was a kid, and I feel like, oh, you know. But sometimes I'm always just like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Like I think that there's a lot of really interesting movies in the conversation this year, but it's almost like everything went into the slightly wrong place. Like we're talking about Mary J. Blige being nominated over Carey Mulligan. Like that's one of those things. Mm-hmm. Mudbound is up for a couple, but it didn't get in the big categories. Call Me by Your Name couldn't manage a Best Director or Best Supporting Actor nomination. Or it's a lot of that, and then you've got movies like Florida Project, which I know people love so much, and was almost completely shut out. It's just, it's a really frustrating list of nominees to look at a little, like, if you just glance at it, you're like, oh, that's generally right. And then the more you sort of, like, spend time with it, you're like, everything's kind of out of place.
That's, you know, that's actually how I feel in general about The Shape of Water.
which
might be... It might be the front runner. It's hard to tell this year in terms of Best Picture, but I just like I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but it just doesn't. It's just kind of to me. It's just kind of clunky, but people love it. Maybe some of you love it, but I just it's one of those things. Like from a distance, I'm not sure, and then I'm not into it.
Visually, I loved it because I'm a visual person, and I mean, I'm just a sucker for beautiful looking things. So visually, I loved it, but as a whole, it was again, as you said, it was good. But I had friends who were like bawling in the theater, and I'm just like, am I just dead on the inside? Like, what is happening? Like, I love Guillermo. I love his work. I love his passion. He's always so excited about what he loves, and it shows in his movies. But Shape of Water, I thought was good. It was, I liked it, but I didn't love it.
Yeah, same. I didn't think that it would. I always expect Guillermo del Toro to do beautiful movies. So I knew that was a given. I knew at the very end of the day that it was going to be beautiful to look at. But in terms of the story, I call it the Beauty and the Beast syndrome. I really, really just cannot stand the core of the woman falling in love with a beast. I'm trying to stop myself from cursing because now I'm getting so mad that I'm just like, oh my gosh, the curse is coming out. But basically, I just get so upset that this is a constant trope. And I was actually kind of stunned that Guillermo relied on that. And the film really pushes that to Erica's point, like there were people in my screening who were just like completely affected by it. I was just like, this is a fish, guys. This is a fish. let's I can't get that out of my head. As fantastical as it is, obviously this is not a film that takes place in reality. However, I just, maybe it's just me, but I can't suspend my belief to that extent. But I also, not even just my belief, but I also cannot fathom I just don't know why this is something that we just constantly rely on, and why this is so affecting as a romance. I mean, if you just want to say, for me, I just thought that she could have just protected him. And once it turned into from like sci-fi drama to romance, I think it lost me. So the romance did not need to be there for me. I really think it killed it.
Agreed.
Yeah. Who was
it? I have to admit, I was one of the folks bawling in the theater at the end. So I would definitely rank it way on top of my Best Picture ballot. And as somebody who just loves, 40s musicals and the 50s monster movies, I mean, it was way up my alley. It's my second favorite of the year behind Mudbound, but it would be way, way high on my ballot. So well, there definitely are folks like myself who adore it.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. So the other one that, well, I'm actually curious what you all think is going to win Best Picture, because this is one of the years where I've been least certain. I kept saying, oh, it'll be Shape of Water, because it's not that divisive, and it has so many nominations. But, maybe it'll be something else. Maybe it'll be Three Billboards, which keeps winning things.
I think it's Get Out.
I think it's Get Out as well.
I,
I hesitantly say Get Out only because I feel like I always feel like there's going to be one. I have a sense, I don't know why, something's going to shake the table and there's going to be one that's going to pop up and everyone's going to be like, wow, like no one predicted it. And I think Get Out might pull out in the clutch and get that best picture. But that maybe that's hopeful thinking for me because I love Get Out, but
I mean, it's wholly wishful thinking on my part. But, like, I do think that there's advocacy when it comes to prediction. And, like, if everybody just says Get Out isn't going to win Best Picture, then Get Out isn't going to win Best Picture. I think a large part of why Moonlight won last year was because people were able to sort of, like, continually make the argument that it deserved it. I also think Black Panther doing what it's doing at the box office right now is only going to boost Get Out.
I know if you're talking Oscar history, it's not common that a movie that's been around this long is even in the conversation, is even nominated. But I think there's something to be said about the fact that this is a movie that people have been able to revisit. And I think it's a movie that grows when you watch it again. I think that's going to be something in its favor that the other nominees aren't going to be able to have that one up a little bit.
Well, it'll be the if it wins, it'll be like the second horror movie and the second horror movie released in February to win.
Yep. And it's been in the conversation as long as it has, and people still aren't bored by it. Like, everybody's still very excited by this movie, and people still love talking about it and love talking about how much they love it. And I feel like I'm being a little strong here in a way that makes it seem like it's not going to be close. I think it's going to be close, but I still think Get Out is going to win.
I want Get Out to win so badly. I don't actually think it will, but I want it to win. I think it deserves to win. I love Call Me By Your Name, but I think Get Out has the edge. Those are the only two films here that I think are worth a damn, honestly. out of all of these other films, I mean, you guys already heard me say that I hate Phantom Thread, and I can get into all the things that I hate about the other films too. But I think Get Out should win. Also, because of all the things that you guys have already said, I have seen that movie countless times at this point, and I always catch something new. And it's funny, so I just finished watching earlier today Psycho, and when you put those two films together, and I'm not saying that they're very, very different. I'm just saying that they're two horror movies. Mm-hmm. And on whichever level you want to put them on, but I'm kind of putting them side by side just by horror movies. Those are two horror movies of many that I have been able to watch over and over and find something new. And that is very, very unusual for not just genre, but for film, and particularly a film that is praised in the Oscars, because a lot of the Oscar films I'd never want to see again. So this it was very, that had that kind of experience for me. I mean, I would love Get Out to win. That would be amazing.
The idea of rewatchability, I think it's interesting when you discuss Oscars, because I think that's one of the problems with recency bias. When so many movies, they wait to release them on purpose because they think they'll be Oscar contenders. But then it ends up being like you don't have any time to digest the movies. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about early Bird movies that make it this far, like Get Out or Silence of the Lambs or Cabaret in its year, because that also came out super early in its year, is that you already know that they're going to hold up in a way because people, you know, have loved them for an entire year. So it's, you know, I think the rewatchability thing, it's like so hard to test if you release everything at the end of the year. But I do think it matters for what lasts.
Yeah, it always feels like it's like Oscar season, and it's just like this racehorse of films coming out every single week. And it's kind of like, you know, if you have a film that comes out, you know, in February or something like that, it's kind of like, okay, it's a good film, but then once it gets to, you know, November, October, whatever, the fall, it's like, does it have that lasting power? Is it fresh in people's minds? And I think Get Out does that. Like, people are still talking about it. People are still doing think pieces. People are still talking about Jordan Peele and how he was able to, you know, do like serve the horror genre justice and really, you know, taking the time to do it and put those little tiny things that make you go, holy crap, like that is so smart. And so I think that is why I kind of, I'm rooting not just for the subject matter, but for the fact that I appreciate a film that does that for people and makes that sort of, you know, cultural impact where people have those discussions.
Do any of you think that Three Billboards is going to win?
I actually do.
I do.
I would love to see Get Out win, but I think the last film, if I'm not mistaken, to win two acting Oscars and screenplay and not picture was The Piano, I think. Oh. And that was, of course, facing Schindler's List, which was, you know, steamrolling that ceremony. You know, I mean, Get Out would be an amazing winner, and I think it is helped by the preferential ballot, because I think a lot of folks are just going to rank Three Billboards dead last, but, you know, if Crash could win Best Picture, I could totally see someone like Three Billboards win Best Picture.
Well, Crash was before the preferential ballot, though.
It also was a surprise, which I've heard the Three Billboards Crash comparison a lot, but the thing is, Crash won, I think, SAG before, and that was it. Right. Three Billboards has been steamrolling, and the last time we saw something steamroll was last year. Like, I think that with both the preferential ballot and this influx of new membership at the Academy, I think we have to, and the fact that this is a remarkably long gap between all of the precursors, award ceremonies, and Oscar voting. It was weirdly long this year.
Yeah.
You throw all that together, like, I don't feel like the fact that Three Billboards won everything is a... It doesn't indicate to me that we're just looking at a steamroll here. To me, it looks more like that movie peaked in its excitement at some point, has now dealt with weeks of backlash, which La La Land did too, and then La La Land wound up losing at the last second. I don't think Three Billboards is going to lose by a lot, but I do think it's going to lose.
I mean, I think, honestly, that Three Billboards, and I despise that movie with my whole being, but I think that Three Billboards is aligned with the politics of the Oscars, sadly, and many people who are voting in the Academy, more so than something, and to use their words, as radical as Get Out, something that is so pointed and so unapologetic as Get Out. Three Billboards is just more aligned with that, what their viewpoints have been.
I think what's interesting about Three Billboards in terms of the Academy reaction is it's one of those movies where when you first watch it, if you're not, I'll just admit it, I liked it quite a bit the first time I saw it, and it was only once, and this doesn't usually happen to me, but it was only once I started reading everybody's takes on it that I was like, oh yeah. that, you know, it, there's a lot of ways in which it falls apart and which it's problematic. But I think maybe because it's so showy that if you're seeing it, like I saw it in the middle of a week where I was seeing like, you know, 30 movies, at the festival.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
when you're seeing things like that, sometimes you, unfortunately, view them on the surface level, and the acting is so showy and it's so like provocative that unless you're really like spending time to think about it, you might not notice some of the problems.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I think the time comes into play.
Yeah.
Because there has been more time now. And people have had the time to revisit it if they want to, or just listen to what other people are saying. And I think that this Academy may vote a little bit more. This is pure speculation and projection on my part, so feel free to discount it. but I think this Academy votes a little bit more based on what they want to be seen as historically the correct choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that's why La La Land's backlash hurt it last year. And I think that's why Three Billboards' backlash is going to hurt it this year. I just think that if you're right, Nathaniel, and I think you're right, that people with more time find the flaws in this movie, well, they've had that time now. Like, they, at this point, if they vote for it, it'll be a willful ignorance thing.
And also, I don't think that this is the kind of year when there's a lot of movies that a lot of different people are passionate about. I don't think this is the type of year where people can just lazily vote for, you know, the thing that's won everything, because, well, I guess it's probably going to win, so I vote for that, you know?
Yeah, which kind of, whenever those anonymous voters things pop up, those pieces, I just want to pull my hair, because it's like, first of all, what a wasted of a vote. What a waste of a vote. Like, I'm like, honestly, there are people who don't even see all the films, who don't take advantage, and then you have people like, you know, us and people who are passionate about film, who probably would be a better, you know, but again, that's, again, salty, but you know, you're right. There's enough time for people to kind of revisit those films and really have a good gauge of, you know, of what that is.
Let's end with one of the party games we like to play with the SmackDown. So with the five nominated actresses, if you had to switch up their roles, who would you like to see tackle that type of role? Not exactly that. You know, obviously the movies are the movies.
I have Mary J. Blige in Shape of Water, and I have Octavia Spencer in Phantom Thread. I wrote down Phantom of the Opera. I don't know why. But
that I want to see.
That's fair. That would actually be amazing. I would watch that so hard.
Someone calls.
I'm curious about Octavia for Phantom Thread. Why?
Oh, great.
I would love, and it's funny, so I had seen her at a panel at Sundance, and she, of many things that she had was talking about there, she talked about how she didn't really want to be in a historical, like, film that was, you know, often relied on race as part of the plot device. And she was talking about just kind of breaking out of a mold that I think that Hollywood has put her in. And so that also inspired it, but also I would love to see her not be nice, you know, I would love to see her just be just, I mean, Cyril was just, for the bulk of that movie, I was just like, what is this woman's problem? why is she so nasty? But I mean, she was also dealing with a misogynist, terrible person that she had to report to, but she checked very, you know, quickly.
Yes, she did.
Yes, which I appreciate. And I think that Octavia has that could have that sensibility on film and really can embody a role like that if Hollywood give her that chance. I think that The Shape of Water is very much in line with how Hollywood has already seen her. This is another reason why I'm not really impressed with it.
Candace, I love that answer, because that is totally the thing with Octavia. I think she's capable of so much more. And I had her in, I would love to see her do something like Lady Bird.
That was my pick.
Yes.
My answer was Octavia Spencer in literally any of these roles. Maybe my choice, I would even go nastier than Cyril and put her in I, Tonya.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Because she would be just as funny as Allison Janney is, and I would really like to see her play someone just so cruel.
Yep, yeah, me too.
The reason why the Lady Bird fit makes so much sense to me is because it's still, I mean, it's what Lucas Hedges' character describes her as, warm but scary. Because Octavia has that warmth, and like, how fascinating would it be for her to use that warmth and then have to add something else to it? Yeah. Like, to have to channel that in a slightly different direction. I think that's the, I guess if we're talking about like, who would be most likely to do something like this? Like, this feels like a natural next step. Like, if Hollywood wants to challenge her and she wants to challenge herself a little bit more, as opposed to something like I, Tonya, which, like, Chris, I would be in line first to see that. But, like, I feel like that would almost, like, if I were Octavia Spencer, I would be even a little bit uncomfortable making that level of a jump. But Lady Bird feels like something that, like, really could be the next kind of thing for her that makes sense.
Erica, how about you? Who would you put in what role?
I'm happy we're talking about Octavia Spencer, because I think in my write-up, I I didn't write it, but in my head, I'm like, I'm just tired of her being supporting. I'm tired of her being the plot device to help to push other characters. I want her to have her own thing, be the lead, and not be... again, I think my other problem with Shape of Water was the fact that she was used as a racial plot device in a way. Like, I know she said that, but I mean, you know, but again, besides the point. So my two switches were probably... Laurie Metcalf and as Allison Janney's character, and Allison Janney's as Laurie Metcalf.
Agreed.
But I would love to see Laurie, because I've seen her on stage, I've seen her film, TV, I adore her, and I would just love her to that totally like, nasty, just really raw. And I think it's funny that all these, some of these supporting actors are all mothers, the roles of mothers, Mary J., all of these, so... I would just love to see Laurie Metcalf just go full throttle as Allison Janney's I, Tonya mother, and Allison Janney as Laurie Metcalf, the mother trying to figure out how to deal with her teenage daughter, which is, again, a very simple, you know, on paper, it's a simple role, but what I loved about the character was the fact that you felt for her as a mother, as a wife, as a woman. And I would love to see those raw layers from Allison Janney, which I think she could do absolutely. So
yeah,
agreed.
Andrew, how about you?
So I was actually thinking Leslie Manville in I, Tonya. I wasn't a huge fan of Allison Janney's portrayal in the film, but I feel like Leslie could have taken this to like a Kim Stanley and Frances level, where she's just like absolutely horrifying and like spine-tinglingly scary. I think she would have been dynamite, unlike Janney, who I think just kind of goes through the motions for the most part. But yeah, that would have been my selection.
It is so sad that we have an Oscar season where Allison Janney is going to win an Oscar and I'm not rooting for her. Like that
bums
me out so hard.
I know. So... y'all know that I stand for it. I will not tolerate.
I wish it was for another role because I love Allison Janney too. And I liked her performance. I really enjoyed her performance in I, Tonya, but she's not my number one, unfortunately. Not for this year, at least.
You know what's interesting to me about Allison Janney in her movie is I like her in it a lot, but I wouldn't have nominated her, but I love Julianne Nicholson in that same movie.
Yeah. Yes!
And she was also so great in Novitiate this year. I don't know if anyone saw that. But I feel like she has that problem that a lot of character actresses have where the role is never quite big enough.
Right.
Or the movie is not successful enough, so she never gets her due. So sometimes when someone who's won so many awards, like Allison Janney, get something, I'm like, oh, but yes, she's great, but how about spreading the wealth a little?
Yeah, totally. I agree with that. And I like the shout out to Julianne Nicholson. I actually had to look up what role she played. She was completely different than she usually looks, so I had to look up what she played. But yes, I actually really, really, really liked that performance.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the only performances in that movie that's subtle.
Yeah.
That's such a loud, brash movie that I feel like we needed more of her. We needed more performances that were that level of controlled.
I think it was intentionally brash. I think that was the
yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, something being intentional doesn't make it good would be my response. Yeah.
I like gotcha. I compare it to I always do this thing when a movie is super loud. I think of like Terrence Stamp and Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. his voice is so like mellow and he's so quiet, and then you just are riveted by him because like everything else is just so outlandish. And yeah, that was definitely happening there, because basically I, Tonya could be performed by drag queens and maybe will at some point.
Jesus Christ is 1000% going to be doing I, Tonya.
RuPaul's Drag Race competition is going to be I, Tonya.
That's hilarious.
Oh God, that's probably the next acting challenge is going to be an I, Tonya parody.
Absolutely, 100%.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming today to discuss these. This is a rare time where we haven't known on the SmackDown who on the SmackDown podcast, I haven't told you who won because I don't know yet because I haven't finished tallying the votes. but it's pretty close right now. So
close between who?
It'll depend. It might come down to the readers because the readers get a vote as well. But it's between Leslie Manville and Laurie Metcalf right now.
Correct.
Wow. Interesting.
I like that. I love a subtle performance, and I probably more than anyone loved Leslie Manville. I was obsessed with her. I'm like, yes, check him. Yes.
Yeah, Somebody needed to.
And clock him to Phil because you are the sister and you know him better than he knows himself, and you better get him together.
I
loved her performance, and I think I was afraid that I would be in the minority because it was such a subtle performance that people might overlook it or think it was it didn't take much, but I think it did a lot than people realize. It was the restraints, but also evoking the emotion of, you know, a sister who recognizes what's going on and still being professional. I just loved it.
She's the only reason to watch that movie. The only reason.
I feel like we need an hour just to get why Candace hates that movie so much.
That would be an hour.
So thanks everybody for coming today. I want to thank my panel, Andrew Carden.
Thank you so much for having me. You can find me at Gold Derby and on my blog at The Awards Connection.
Chris Feil.
Thank you so much for having me. I am on Twitter at Chris V. Feil. That's F-E-I-L. And you'll probably see my stuff on The Film Experience.
And Candace Frederick.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is super fun. You can find me on Twitter at Real Talker. That's RealTalker for more debate and conversation and for me to give you a more elaborate take on Phantom Thread. I'm happy to talk about it. and you can also find my work at Contently. Contently under my name, Candace Frederick.
Great. And Erica Mann?
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun talking to you guys. You can find me on Twitter at the NYC Film Check. That's the NYC Film Check.
And Kevin O'Keefe.
This was great. Thank you guys for a great conversation. You can find me on Twitter at Kevin P. O'Keefe, and I write about RuPaul's Drag Race and have a weekly movie column and whatever else is gay under the sun for Into, which is Grindr's new LGBTQ magazine, and you can look it up at intomore.com.
Great. Thanks again, everyone, and may all your favorites win at the Oscars on Sunday, unless they are not my favorites.
Fair.